Hey, so the boys are back in town. I just got back from the moose hunt in Canada, which we'll talk about on the show here. Dave, you just got back. I'll give you the round of applause. Dave Catalano is now a grandfather.
Yes, I am. My daughter is in Tennessee, and she is finishing up her medical residency stuff there. And yeah, just gave birth to my first grandchild, a beautiful little girl. And I was lucky enough and blessed enough to jump on an airplane and get my booty there just before.
In the nick of time.
In the nick of time, just before the baby was born. So I was there at the hospital and the whole nine yards. And that was worth every penny of that flight and nervousness and everything else. So it was awesome.
I've said it to you before. Whatever was in the water at the Catalano house when you were raising kids, I got to figure out how to tap into that, because you got two kids that are doctors. There was something going on there, man.
Yeah.
Congratulations,
thank
Dave.
You. Thank you very much. Yes.
So we're back now, finally. Like I said, we'll go into the Canada moose hunt. First, I want to give Jim Irwin and Shooting Performance Institute a shout out. Thank you for sponsoring the show. He's got a bunch of stuff coming up. In fact, yesterday was the defensive pistol course, but you can check out all the upcoming courses at shootingperformanceinstitute.com. I also want to get into a little bit here, this first segment. Let's chat about the commission meeting.
Yeah.
That happened. In fact, it was the weekend I was getting my luggage stuck in customs in Canada, but we'll talk about that.
Good times. Yeah, I know the commission that just occurred. It was a pretty standard one, but one of the things is the e-tag was approved.
That's what I wanted to ask about.
Yeah, the e-tag was approved.
Okay.
Now, the big thing is don't expect it like next year. It's got to go through its process, you know, because it is electronic. It is, there's a lot of elements. It's basically an app that has to be developed. And then, you know, it has to be, what do they call that? Like field tested in a sense to work out the bugs. So by anything, I mean, it probably maybe like turkey season in 27, the early tag. So like around 27-ish, you probably start seeing the e-tags. There's a lot of talk about it right now in relation to, you know, a lot of us hunters, older group.
Yes.
We really like the paper. I mean, we like to know, me personally, I like to know that my tag and my license and my important identification stuff is in my backpack. I have a little pouch, just Velcros in. I slide it in my pack. I know where it is.
Yes.
So
I'm not that old, but I'm the same way.
Yeah.
I've got on the back of my bino harness.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a pocket there, and that's where, like, every morning I can just tilt it forward. Oh, yeah, there's my tags. There's whatever.
The little pouch that I have fits right there behind my bino case.
And you know you've always got it.
It slides right in that pocket. You know, there's been questions about that, and then there's a whole thing like, well, what do I duct tape my phone to the meat?
Or, right.
There's some policy, but it was approved. It is going forward. Do expect it over the next
couple
years. 2 years.
Again, I was out of the country, so I wasn't there. But one of the things, I think they could just solve some of the problem with making it an either or.
Yeah.
Because there are going to be those hunters that are in their late 60s or 70s that don't have a smartphone.
Yeah.
That just say, I'm not getting a smartphone. I got my whatever, and that's what I'm using. And I don't know, maybe this was discussed, but why not just make it like a, hey, either or?
That may be an option. You know, for at least the first few years, maybe an either or type of a deal. And then it'll transition fully into an e-tag. I can't see it being cold turkey, like, but being it's this is it and that's all you got, you know, I think it'll be a transitional
phase.
Yeah, because I know I've got an uncle who's 70. Yeah, 70 now. He's still rocking a flip phone.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't, you know, he doesn't use the iPhone stuff or anything like that. He uses like a burner phone. And then when it's done, he goes and gets another one. And that's his thing. It's like, I don't need all this other junk. I'm not going to sit on the phone and flip through TikToks and whatever.
They're not interested.
They don't care. They're so old school. It's
Exhibit
just
A. That would
Exhibit
be,
A.
I'd use your uncle as like, hey, what about this guy?
Yeah. Yeah. And he's a hunter and he's like, yeah, I'll never do that stuff. So there's going to have to be some kind of a leniency in that fashion.
What else got brought up at the commission meeting?
Oh, man.
As far as it was pretty dry.
Yeah, it was a pretty dry one. They were doing several second readings on policies, and a lot of those got moved into, you know, got advanced to a vote on the next commission, which would be January.
So did the lifetime tag thing get brought up? Where one and done for sheep, moose.
I think that was one of the readings.
Okay.
There, you know, it's, these are policies, and then the commission will go through the policies, make changes, make comments, and then the department will go back and honor those changes and stuff, and then they bring it back for another reading, and then it just kind of gets kind of fine-tuned until it either gets approved or rejected.
Gotcha. So, gotcha. That was one I was interested in. I had a conversation with our guide in Canada. Yeah. And so we were doing the thing going through our phones. And he was like, yeah, that this was this sheep hunt. This was this sheep hunt, so on and so forth for Rockies. I finally was like, man, how many sheep tags have you drawn? And he goes, well, it's over the counter.
Yeah.
If you're successful, you got to wait a year. But then you just go get another one. So I was telling him about Nevada and how, you know, like drawing a California bighorn sheep tag is you just won the lottery.
Oh,
and
for sure. Yeah.
We were going through all that. Yeah. So just my mind was absolutely blown going, man, you can hunt sheep
over the counter. Basically
every year.
Yeah.
If you want to go help friends, but you got to wait a year if you're successful. But there were some interesting.
Oh, darn.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, shucks. It was interesting. And I was asking him kind of, you know, how do they manage the population, all this stuff. And he was telling me that basically the sheep hunting up there is so rugged and remote that people just don't do it.
Yeah.
Like a lot of them, Canadians just won't go. And now there's core group that will go do it. But like his last hunt, they were 60 miles in.
Oh, wow.
On foot. So it's $1,000 basically, $1,000 Canadian to have a helicopter drop
your
resupplies.
Oh, okay.
So right. If
and
you're
they can't
out
use
there,
a helicopter to drag your booty out of there?
I think that'd be more expensive. Yeah. I don't know.
Wow,
60 miles.
Man. I mean, that would be something when you got done with it to be able to say, yeah, I did that. I accomplished that.
And he said that's why like guys will maybe do it 1 year, but then they're like, no, I'm not. And I'm sure there are places.
I checked the box.
Yeah. I'm sure there are places you don't have to go 60. But he was saying it's just such a hard hunt.
Yeah.
And he's a hunting guide, so he could commit the time. But basically, he was out there for 20 days.
Oh, my God.
20 days.
Well, you
got
to figure how long does it take to take you to hike in 60 miles on foot. And it's not, you know, it's not like city park walking.
No.
This is up and down hills, unstable soil.
In the Canadian Rockies.
Yeah. So you're not doing 20 miles a day.
They did 230-mile days on the way.
Holy.
Okay, so the
moly.
Yeah, he's a 28-year-old guy.
Well, okay, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, so he's still getting after it, but anyway, back to the Nevada thing. So we talked about that. He was asking me, wrong person to be asking, but about the habitat, about the programs for making sure that we have the herd size we need, all that stuff. And I'm the wrong person to ask about that. But I just thought, man, this is crazy. You could sheep hunt every single year or every other year if you're successful.
Yeah.
And they've got a real stringent policy on, you know, basically the curl's got to come up past the eye.
Oh, okay.
I mean, they're shooting like Rockies.
Yeah, so you're talking almost full curls.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it's got to be a full curl.
Yeah,
and
it has
then
to be
some.
A full curl. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's the, like, he did that 60-mile thing. They did that, and they only saw one legal ram, and it was way, way off. And so he never pulled the trigger, but he said that was, he was kind of, and you could tell, he was kind of making the sales pitch to my dad and I as far, but then you start looking at the price of some of those. It's like, yo, man, I don't have $100,000 to go hunt sheep.
No,
that's not in my,
it's not in the wheelhouse right now.
No.
It's not exactly, it's not even on the priority list.
I got to start buying lottery tickets, I suppose.
Something.
But yeah,
hey, man,
for non-residents,
cryptocurrency, the bull run's happening.
Yeah. So, yeah. I heard, but. Yeah, so anyway, so all that's coming up on the show, but I really want to get into the moose hunt, some takeaways from it, then we'll go from there.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Thanks to Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight, for sponsoring the show. Over the break, we got chatting about the lifetime tag on Shane. We'll get to the moose hunt, but I want to sidebar real quick. We got chatting about the lifetime tag thing that's going around, and I didn't know this, but you said mountain goat is lifetime, moose is lifetime.
Right.
And what I mean by that, one and done for people listening.
Yeah, you can get one tag and that's it. You can never put in again.
And then we started doing the math on sheep tags, not deserts, but Californias and Rockies. It might as well be a one and done tag anyway. Yeah. I don't know anybody that's drawn more than one California tag or more than one Rocky tag.
No.
There's a handful of people that have drawn for deserts and gotten multiple deserts.
Yeah.
But for those of you listening at home, if you know anybody that has drawn
two Californias or two Rockies, I know. Yeah.
Let us know.
I think my uncle has pulled three deserts.
That's what you're telling me.
In his lifetime.
I didn't know if you wanted to out him like that. But.
Yeah, full on, unk. Thanks, buddy.
So it might as well be, and especially you said the max points is 32. Just looked that up.
Yeah, 32 points is the max points that you can carry. And I think the average points people will have for, say, California right now, I think it's like 16 or 17 points is the average, somewhere in that range. So, so as we were doing the numbers, we're like, okay, if you have to wait 16 before you can even get the tag.
Right.
And if somehow you're lucky enough to draw a tag at the age of 12, then you got to wait your 10-year waiting period.
If you're 16,
then you got to wait another, say, 17 years, and then somehow you luckily draw again at that magic number. You know, I've got 23 and still.
Nothing.
You know, that's
a lot of people. But,
so the chances of
getting two,
I mean, it kind of makes sense. You might as well just make it one and done to give people that do have 23, 25, 32 points. Because it seems like every year you hear something about some 13, 14, 15.
Luke Bryan, who drew the moose tag.
So that kind of stuff.
I think the devil's advocate argument is because of the way the point system works, you have preference because of the number of points. But I don't want to go down a conspiracy rabbit hole, but there are those, you see those people draw and everything and you're going, man, I know there are a pile of people in there with like maxed out on points.
Yeah.
How come there aren't more of them in there drawing the tags? But anyway.
Yeah.
Hey, so Dave, I'm back.
Yes. And I have been dying to hear about this. I've been texting you
while you were gone
and I realize you were in the backcountry and weren't responding, but
no. Where do you want to start with the hunt? I got some takeaways, but we could start at the good part. Let's start with the kill, and then we'll kind of fill in the blanks from there.
Yeah.
So day five, we kind of drew straws, and I don't want to get the guide in hot water, but I think at this point he figured I was fairly competent in the woods and I wasn't. We had cut some fresh grizzly tracks and I was just kind of like, okay, man. So I think he thought, okay, this guy's not going to freak out if I leave him, send him over here by himself. So the morning of the moose kill, I decide, or we all talk, and I go into a natural mineral lick. So I hike into this one spot and there was a bull cruising, and we'll get into hunting post-rut moose, which is, I don't know that I would do that again.
Pretty tough.
Yeah, it's like finding a needle in a haystack.
Yeah, because they don't vocalize, they don't do anything. They just kind of...
He called them the ghosts of the woods.
Yeah, they just kind of meander about.
Yes, and they don't get tied to an area, nothing.
No, they get really nomadic.
Yes, and they don't herd up like elk or anything. Like, you're looking for one animal in a vast expanse of country.
In millions of acres.
Yeah, and you might find one, and then they just don't stop moving. You know what I mean? They just kind of feed along and cruise, and so it's like you might find one, but by the time you get over to where you last saw it, that sucker's 3-4 miles away, and he's still just got his head down cruising, eating. So anyway, it was work. But my dad and the guide into a musk egg, which that was a new one for me.
A musk egg?
Musk egg. Yeah, like a bog.
Oh, okay.
But the musk egg is actually like a thick layer of moss and grasses that grows over the surface of ponds and lakes.
Yeah.
So you're walking on like a waterbed, which is really weird and disconcerting for a guy from Nevada, where it's like, we got dry dirt under our feet. Yeah. I can hike for miles. When you're bobbing and weaving on these muskeg things, man, how deep is this below me?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you're kind of like,
I don't know about this. How thick is that moss?
How much's its weight capacity?
It was weird, and it sucks the energy out of you. I've always prided myself on my ability to throw on a pack and just go for days.
Yeah.
This is like energy robbing. I imagine like running in deep, loose sand or something where it just saps you. You're like, man, I don't want to walk anymore. This sucks.
Oh, man.
I'm worked. So my dad and the guide go to this musk egg. Well, sure enough, I kind of hike into this mineral lick and there was fresh bull sign all over. But like we talked about, that could have been, he could be 8 miles away at this point, but it was the most bull sign we'd seen. So I was like, all right, I'll put my eggs in that basket. Well, literally they get to this other musk egg. I was there maybe like 30 minutes or so on this natural mineral lick spot. And I hear boom. And I was like, I bet you anything, my dad just killed 2 for 2. So sure enough, I fire up the inReach and my dad killed another bull. They got there. It was standing.
I was waiting for you to say you shot it.
No. I had a whole funny
story.
Your
pictures and stuff
you
sent me were just like you guys holding the moose. I'm like, okay, I need
to
know.
Who
got it?
My dad. The guy's got a rabbit's foot in his back pocket.
He really does. Yeah. That guy.
The thing was standing, and we also had, it was a full moon the whole time we were up there. And I mean, bright, no cloud cover, full moon.
Oh, like the kind of moon where you can hike at night.
Oh, yeah. I was walking around without a headlamp every night. Yeah.
Those are pretty cool nights, though. That's pretty awesome.
Watching that thing come up was an unforgettable experience, but you add a lone animal that wants to cruise, and then you add in it can cruise 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do you get on these things?
Yeah. Ask your dad.
Yeah. They walk up. And the story I got secondhand after the fact, I actually had like a funny story. Like I felt somebody kick my back. I was on the moose or something. I was going to lie and make up a funny story, but nah, they just.
I would have seen through it.
Yeah, yeah. They walked out and this bull was standing 150 yards out into the musk egg. And
150.
So all that work we did on long range, all that out the window, 150 yard shot. And I mean, from brisket to back, you're talking about like 3 feet on those things.
Oh, yeah.
So at 150 yards, you don't even have to have a zeroed rifle.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, no way.
Wow.
Well, because his moose last year was only 200 yards.
Yeah, I think it was at like 260
or something. Yeah. Yeah. So, and then on top of that, you didn't even get to see how well your PRC.
Nothing. It remains.
It remains bloodless.
3 shots in Canada, and they were at a piece of paper to make sure nothing got knocked off on the flight up. So I fired a 3-round group. I was still zeroed, and that was it. That's the only time I pulled the trigger in Canada.
Wow.
But some takeaways from the hunt. I want to get into some stuff coming up here in the final 2 segments because I did learn some really valuable lessons and I'll tie them back into that elk hunt I did with my dad. Do not go anywhere. We are going to be right back on Nevada Backcountry. Hey, thanks for joining us again on Nevada Backcountry. If you have any trees that need some work done after this windstorm and first big winter storm we've had, make sure you get in touch with Mike at Battleborn Tree Service. Phenomenal guy, phenomenal company. They will take care of your property like it is their own. We got yakking over the break and I suddenly was like, oh, let's start talking about this.
Yeah.
The size of moose is what I think is just, I mean, the head alone, the tip of the nose to the back, like by the ears, you're talking about like a good 28, 30 inches.
Yeah, that picture was nuts when you guys were both holding the antlers. Yeah.
They are
nuts.
They are massive. And I was giving Dave an example. So like a mature big bull elk, you're talking about 80-ish, give or take, you know, 10 pounds or whatever, about 80-ish pounds per rear quarter. A moose, a fully mature bull moose, you're talking about 200 some odd pounds per rear quarter.
That's nuts. So do you, on something like that, do you have to bone it out? Because how do you get that off the mountain? I mean,
oh, well,
you know, you can strap the 200 pounds on a pack, but
no,
you can't
go too far
with it. You're not going too far.
No. So, yeah, I think bone out is the preferred method.
Yeah.
And they don't. I mean, like, I shouldn't say that. I'm sitting here trying to choose my words wisely because I don't know what the regulations are in Canada.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I'm not sure. I should know that.
I know for you to bring it back over into the States, it has to be boned out.
Yeah. Well, that's where it's actually at a place in a small, tiny little town up there. So coming up here first week of December, my dad is going to drive back up to get the meat.
What? He's driving up there to get the meat?
Yes. Yeah. He's going
to
just...
Well, he's got nothing better to do.
Yeah, might as well go
get... Might as well go drive 3,000 miles.
So he and my brother's moving back to town right now.
Right, right.
So he and my brother are actually... And it's Cynthia's birthday that week.
Oh, you can't do that.
I can't do that. Yeah. So they're going to go back up and they're going to stay at my brother's place in Coeur d'Alene. So that'll knock off about 2/3 of the trip. And then my dad's just going to rip up there, stay the night, and then come back to Coeur d'Alene. So gotcha. That's kind of the plan, but...
And then the head's still there as well, and then that has to have, in order to come
across, all the brain matter,
all that stuff has to be removed and cleaned and... Okay.
So he's just going to do a European with it. The one he got last year was an exceptional specimen the area.
That thing was awesome.
Yeah, and you don't get... And this is why we wanted to kind of talk about this. You don't get the Yukon moose. It's a different subspecies. That's when you start getting into those like 65-inch, just massive things where a dude could lay between the antlers.
Yeah.
There's that one
that just got shot 72-inch.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, I just saw it on, I think EB sent it to us.
Our
buddy EB.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll have to check out. Yeah.
But anyway, I mean.
That's a different
deal.
That's
a completely different subspecies.
I called my dad's a Shiras. It is not a Shiras.
No.
It's a Canadian.
Canadian,
yes. Yeah. So Canadian. The area we were in, a typical size for the moose, for the bulls up there is 30 to 45 inches. That's your average moose. The one my dad shot last year was a 48.5-inch moose.
Yeah, that thing was
exceptional.
That thing was a smoker for
that. It was giant.
Yeah.
The one this year was just at 40 inches. So still
on
the upper end.
But
yeah, you don't get that big palmated.
You don't get the traditional picturesque, that, you know, when you go somewhere and you see pictures of moose, it's always this. Like you could swim inside.
In each side of the antlers.
Yeah, you
can
give your baby a bath in it. It's just big old
snow. That's not this.
No.
Yeah.
No, that's the Alaskan Yukons.
Correct.
Just.
Yeah. He's going to do a European. It was a great moose. I mean, big, not as big as his one last year. But yeah, he's going to go back up, get the meat. Now, let's talk about a little bit of the physicality of the hunt.
Yeah.
We did 52.7 miles on foot with packs.
Over 5 days.
Over 7 days?
7 days.
7 days of hunting.
Okay.
Yep. So we had one real long day that we did just a hair over 12 miles, which again, in Nevada, it's kind of like, well, okay, shoot, I can knock out 12 miles, no problem.
Yeah.
I tore holes in my gaiters from like climbing over deadfall. It is thick. If you're not in the thick timber, you're walking on musk eggs like a waterbed trying to keep your balance hoofing it through kind of pothole stuff. Yeah, just a totally different experience. But I wanted to bring this up and I'm going to tie in a little bit of conditioning to this.
Yeah.
So when we were on that elk hunt, we never talked about it on the show. I didn't want to out anybody or anyway, we had an injury. somebody's back went out pretty badly, in fact, had to carry him, get him in a side-by-side. I would encourage anybody, if you are going into the hills or going on a hunt out of country, whatever, it doesn't matter how easy you think it's going to be. I knew this would be work, but I think I underestimated the amount of work. Man, put a pack on, start walking on uneven terrain. Save yourself the wear and tear on your body, the potential for injury. There were a couple times out there where it's like I punched through some of that muskeg and I found myself like up above my gator to my knee in cold water and swampy mud stuff. And it was like, you know, you get off balance, you could tear an ACL, you can whatever. Yeah. Man, please, people listening, if you've been saving up money and you're going on this hunt, or if you've just, you've drawn an elk tag or something, I beg of you, just do yourself a favor and walk with a pack on. And it will grind you up.
Yeah, and don't skimp on boots.
No, do not skimp on boots.
I mean, I've been on several hunts where if I didn't have the boots I've got, you know, my Crispies.
Crispies and stuff is what you're wearing.
I don't know if I could have gotten through the whole thing in, say, a lesser boot, because just it can be brutal. But
yes,
and that's part of it. You can be in the best condition of all, but if you wear like crappy gear, it's going to wrench you up. Your joints are going to feel like someone's been beating on them with a hammer.
Absolutely,
all day long.
You are. Yeah.
So, yes. So, question then with all of this. You know, your dad's in his 60s, but he's fit as all.
Dave, my dad is 70.
Holy Lord.
Sorry, Dad.
No, so you just called him out. Well, so, you know, but he's in great shape.
Specimen.
Yeah. Would you recommend a hunt like this, or that the hunt that you guys just went on, would you recommend it to our listeners, you know, if they have the conditioning to do it?
Oh, 100%.
It was worth it.
Once a lifetime experience. Well, I don't know. My dad's done it 2 years in a row now. I already want to go back.
Yeah.
I got some unfinished business.
Yeah,
but,
you do.
But
maybe don't take your dad this time.
No, I can't. I would recommend it to, you know, hey, look, if you're older, you're retired, you can financially afford to go do a hunt like this, by all means, go do it. But yeah, my dad is an anomaly in that he has a capacity for physical work that I have never met another 70-year-old that can handle that kind of day in and day out, because you're getting up before sunrise. You're not going to sleep till well after sunset. You're hiking on uneven terrain. You're carrying a pack. You're carrying a gun. On and on.
Yeah.
I feel still, in fact, like my hamstrings, my legs feel sore. It's going to be a while before I'm fully like, oh, okay. Oh, I feel normal again.
Yeah.
At 70, he was... Yeah, but again, he's an anomaly.
Yeah.
I would say if you're 60 or older, I would spend a good 2-3 months on a stair stepper with a pack.
Get yourself tuned up.
Walk side hill. That's the biggest thing I noticed, is even though we were in these flat muskegs, you're on these like pothole things going down. You're doing the ankle roll side hill thing, from a picture, it looks like this picturesque kind of grassy,
because everything's over the
flat
muskeg
surface.
Yeah.
Once you're in it and walking, you realize, oh, there's a 2-foot hole. There's a foothold. It's that. But yeah, I absolutely would recommend it to older folks. Again, we're not talking about a 60 miles in sheep hunt.
Yeah.
Living like it's not that.
Right. I mean, the next thing I was kind of curious about is after you guys had that animal on the ground, I mean, I don't know how many folks out there have ever seen a moose on the hoof or on the ground. They're enormous.
Yes. Yeah, it's a giant animal.
It's a giant animal.
Yeah.
Like, where do you start?
Oh,
I mean,
anything else.
You had the guide. You had the guide there who's done it a ton and kind of got things rolling. How did you get that thing?
And hold
off
on. Hold on. Here's all confession time.
Uh-oh.
He had a buddy that has some kind of camp thing, like a cabin on some lake that was nearby. So he was able to, he
radio the guy?
Got game bags. I don't know. I was over in a mineral lick at this point.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm just going, oh man, my dad shot. Oh, God dang. He had a quad and the guy had, I think, just game bags. Anyway, he was able to use the phone a friend thing with, I think, the InReach. Okay. He fired that up.
Yeah.
Again, I'll say this. If you're thinking about putting together a hunt like this, we got super fortunate. The guide we had actually personally hunts in that unit, has done outfitting for a bunch of different people in that area.
So he has connections.
He has connections. You don't realize how valuable those connections can be until there's a moose on the ground.
Yeah, until you have a 1,000-1,500 pound animal on the ground.
Right. So there's the confession to listeners.
Well, yeah. You know what? I'd take that all day long.
Yeah,
I don't care. People can call, oh, you wussy. Yep. You betcha.
Yeah. He had all a friend. Day. I forget the, it was something, I'm going to forget the name of the lake that his friend had a place on, like a cabin out there.
Yeah. Oh, there's only a few lakes up there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know,
half of them aren't named, but that was clutch.
Yeah.
For sure. The InReach Messenger.
That is magic. Absolutely crucial. Yeah.
Yes.
That is absolute magic. Since those things came out and we started using them in the field, it's like, wow, this is.
Oh, it's
awesome.
A game changer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Absolute game changer. We'll talk a little more about some of the, I'll call them, trials and tribulations of the hunt when we come back on Nevada Backcountry. Final segment of Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Thank you to Truck Envy for sponsoring the show. It's getting colder, the storm coming through. Get your truck outfitted before you head out into the hinterlands of Nevada. Find yourself in a situation you don't want to be in. Make sure you go see Andy and the crew at Truck Envy on South Virginia here in Reno. We started getting into some of the stuff as far as the size of moose. We were talking about those InReaches. I want to go through some of the, just the cold. And yeah. I want to plug a couple things that saved my bacon. So I was unsuccessful. I guess we should have said that right up.
Oh, I think everyone figured that one out pretty quick.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they knew I was going. They're like, yeah, unsuccessful. Yeah.
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 Yeah. His dad will get it.
I never even got a shot at a moose. I chambered one round the entire hunt. And that was when we hiked down into another lake. Go figure.
Yeah.
We hiked into this spot. And as soon as we got down this really steep hill and got down in there, the hills lit up with wolves. There's a wolf pack in there.
Oh, wow.
We had wolf tags.
Yeah, you did.
We didn't think we'd be grinding the whole time for moose based on my dad's last hunt. Big difference.
Yeah.
He did an early October rut hunt last year where you can call them.
Yeah, they're hollering the whole time.
So you do some cow calls or whatever, you can get bulls to come. So it's like post-rut moose.
Yeah, they're phantoms.
He kept calling them the ghosts of the North Woods or something like that. And they'll get sneaky too. In fact, the very first day he did some cow calls and there was a bull. And what's cool is you could hear the antlers scraping. It makes like a hollow scraping sound.
Oh, cool.
On that thick brush stuff. I never even saw it though. At one point, it sounded like it was about 60 yards away. It was coming through, you know, stomping and splashing and breaking branches and everything. But here's what's crazy. This stuff was so dang thick that you would think a mouse couldn't sneak through there without making noise. Well, this bull came stomping in and making all kinds of racket. All of a sudden, and we don't know if he winded us or whatever, got to maybe 60, 75-ish yards, dead silent. You could hear a pin drop. How in the hell that thing disappeared?
Just went into stealth mode.
It was mind-boggling.
Wow.
Because we're listening to this thing coming, and I'm getting ready. I hadn't chambered around yet, but I was like, okay, like he's going to pop out. There's a little opening. He's going to pop out. I'm going to whack a moose on my first day.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Hundreds of years of doing it.
Yeah. He knew something was up.
Conditioning of some sort, yeah.
Yeah. But like I said, I mean, just crazy in those like willows and everything,
yeah.
Right? That thick brush crazy how this thing sounds like a freight train coming in, and then all of a sudden, either wind or what, something spooked him, because all of a sudden it was just dead silent, and we never heard him leave. The guide climbed up in this tree and to try to see down in there. He never saw him.
You think aliens,
yes,
maybe?
Yes. I think they've got stealth mode.
Yeah.
It's weird. So that was kind of challenging. But back to the, oh man, it was cold, Dave. It was so cold. I'll give a shout out to Stone Glacier and their down pants. The last
game changer.
Game changer. Well, survival, I'll put it that way. The last night, I mean, I put those every time we stopped for more than 20, 30 minutes.
You slapped them
I'm
on.
Slapping those on because it was freezing.
Are they Velcro? Like the
no,
side
it's got a zipper.
Or, oh,
but
zip
they
side.
Zip,
okay,
they zip all the way down, so you don't have to take anything off.
Right.
And here's a tip for listeners. If you're thinking about getting a pair of down pants, get them a size larger than you would wear, because once you've got like long johns, I was wearing these like fleece wicking base layer, my hunting pants and everything else, gaiters. By the time you put all that on, you're probably a size or two bigger than you are in your jeans anyway. It was so nice to have a larger pair that I could unzip the sides, throw it on, zip it up over. We could glass, chit chat, eat, whatever, look for moose. And then, okay, we're going to start moving again, zip them off, throw them in the pack. I'm good to go. The last night of the hunt, fat lady hasn't quite sung yet, but she's getting ready. She's warming up.
Yeah.
About half hour left of my moose hunt. My dad was actually, he was back at the cabin dealing with the meat and dealing with all the other stuff that comes with having a moose down. Josh and I, Josh was our guide. We're sitting out there. Dave, it was so cold. I don't know if I could actually have made a shot at more than a couple hundred yards because I was jackhammering so hard.
Really? Oh, are you talking negative 10, 20?
It was minus 13 that morning.
Oh, dude.
So it was cold. And this is evening, sun setting. It was actually one of the rarer cloudy days, but those pants, I sat with those down pants unzipped and kind of like laid across trying to stay warm. And I got to give this guy credit, man, because I started that. I knew we had a hike out. The snow hasn't fallen. The grizzlies are still kind of active. I was kind of getting to that point where it's like, man, this just ain't going to happen. We've got whatever, 20 minutes left of legal shooting light. Sun's already set. You can shoot half hour after. And I know we
temperatures dropping like a stone.
Long hike out in the area we were in. We hiked through that thick, like willowy stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, so we're not going to see in the off chance we do encounter a bear. We're not going to have a lot of time or a lot of standoff. We're going to be hiking out at night. We had heard a gunshot like a mountain or two over off in the distance. And that's like a dinner bell for grizzlies up there.
Yeah.
So we knew like, okay, man, or this is what's going through my head as the clock's ticking. I'm like, I'm just not going to get a moose, man. I will give Josh credit. He said, absolutely not. Cause I kind of said, hey, why don't we start picking our way out slowly? And, that way we're not like pitch black going through that thick stuff. There's still a little bit of loom at this point. And, he was like, absolutely not. And I'm like, this poor guy's out here jackhammering away. Like, holy smokes, man. Good for him.
Yeah.
But that's how he makes his living. And he had a very good point. And this was one of my takeaways. We were kind of chit-chatting one morning. He worked his ass off, Dave. He was up like half hour before we were. He had coffee every morning ready. He had some sort of skillet, you know, cast iron deal, food made every morning. He made dinner every night. He cleaned everything every night. He was in bed an hour after we were. He did every step of that hunt, and it was a grind. It was hard. You're not seeing a lot of animals because it's colder than hell. And he told me one morning as I'm sitting there like sipping my coffee, trying to come back to life, he said, you know, here's what I've realized in guiding. The only two things I can control are my attitude and my effort. And he said, as long as I leave and the client feels like my attitude was great and I gave 100% effort, that's a successful hunt for me as a guide. because those are the only two things I can control.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I can relate to that.
I was like, what a mature take for a 28-year-old dude.
Yeah.
You know, we were kind of like, oh, man, we're not really seeing moose. We always felt like we were one step behind. I mean, we came across big, and that's the other thing, like dinner plate size tracks. So bull moose tracks are pretty huge. I've told you how cold it was up there. There was still water in the track.
Oh, so it was fresh, fresh.
Fresh. That was kind of the story of the hunt, was like.
So they were just always a couple steps ahead. Just enough to keep you moving.
We glassed one up and it was like, okay, we couldn't tell kind of the angle we had on it. And it was about a couple miles away. We couldn't tell if it was a bull or a cow because the front half was in like that thick stuff.
Yeah, always is.
Always is.
Yeah.
So we were kind of sitting there and was like, well,
let's go for it.
That's a moose. Yeah, let's go for it. So we hiked over there. By the time you get there, where is it?
Yeah.
Where'd it go? How'd it just disappear in this? That was the hunt in a nutshell. Takeaway for the listeners. If you do a moose hunt like this, I don't know, as much as I loved hunting with Josh, he's a good dude, good head on his shoulders, very knowledgeable. I learned a lot about what to look for and the sign and everything. And I just peppered him with questions. I would not do a post rut moose hunt again.
You do the early October rut
hunt. I do the rut hunt because they are not, like I said, with elk late season, elk are herded up.
Yeah.
You can find 30, 40 animals out in the mountains.
Oh, yeah.
If they're in a big herd. You know what I mean? Like, if you're looking for one single solitary animal in vast country that they never stop moving in, boy, that was a lot more work than I anticipated.
Yeah.
That's my takeaway from a moose hunt.
All right. Well, sounds like you still had a great time, though.
I did. I absolutely had a great time. Those down pants, man, Stone Glacier, they didn't give me the pants. I paid for the pants. Those were life-saving.
Yeah.
So challenging hunt, but man, good to be back in the States. Couldn't be happier to be back in the studio with one of the best guys I know that is a grandpa now.
Yes.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this weekend's episode of Nevada Backcountry. Tom Gresham's Gun Talk is coming up next.